Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And today, I am here to review what is often considered to be one of the best Jackie Chan films of the 90s, unless you ask Screen Rant. This is Rush Hour, starring Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker. Here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. Earlier this month, it was Jackie Chan's birthday, and he turned a whopping 72 years old. Happy belated birthday, Jackie Chan. Thank you for making so many movies. And I wanted to watch one of those many options to celebrate his birthday and then to review here on the show. And it took me a moment, but I decided I would go with what is, as I said, arguably one of the best Jackie Chan films of the 90s. 90s Jackie Chan is peak Jackie Chan, for sure. I think it is worth doing an entire episode at some point trying to decide what is the definitive 90s Jackie Chan film, but we'll save that discussion for another day. It also would probably, there would also probably be a whole other episode, I guess spin two episodes off of this one, talking about, so we have Rush Hour, the Rush Hour trilogy, and then we have the Shanghai duology with Owen Wilson. If Jackie Chan was to make another buddy comedy, who would Jackie Chan tag team with? And I think there is one very obvious option, though though he would not be my first pick. I feel like right now it would be Kevin Hart, Jackie Chan and Kevin Hart together doing a thing, because Kevin Hart is widely popular. He's not necessarily my cup of tea for a comedian, but I could definitely see that happen. I don't think we've ever had Jackie Chan and a lady partner in a comedic role like Chris Tucker or Owen Wilson. So maybe there would definitely be, who could we get? Oh, I'm struggling with her name, and Claire's gonna kill me because she loves this person. She's from Saturday Night Live. Kate McKinnon. It took me a second. I wanted to say Nicole Kidman, and that was absolutely wrong. Kate McKinnon. Maybe Jackie Chan and Kate McKinnon. I don't know. Anyway, that's a discussion for another episode at some point. You can feel free, though, wherever you find this episode, to leave a comment who you think Jackie Chan should tag team with in a future buddy comedy. Anyway, so this is the one, though, that gets this started, this whole Jackie Chan and a comedian, comedic actor working together to do stuff. This is the originator of this style of film that Jackie Chan is making here. And this is also Jackie Chan's first big commercial Hollywood film. Okay, so up until this point, he's been doing Hong Kong, or I think he had like some other countries doing movies, but mostly Hong Kong action films up until this point. Rush Hour was his first big Hollywood production. So it's a big mark on Jackie Chan's career, and obviously goes over very, very well for him here in the United States. Along with it being a historic film in the career of Jackie Chan, it is also a historic film in the history of movie reviews, because Rush Hour is the reason we have Rotten Tomatoes. You know that thing that for some people, for some film bros, is like the end-all be-all for if a movie is good? That thing that anymore when you see a movie's in theaters that, you know, rated 100% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Rush Hour is the movie you need to blame for the existence, or thank for the existence, of Rotten Tomatoes, because in the run-up to the release of this film, the creator of Rotten Tomatoes, Steve, I'm really just having a hard time with names today. San Dung. Totally messed that name up. Not Steve. Definitely not Steve. I take it back. He was a big Jackie Chan fan, and in the run-up to Rush Hour, he wanted to basically play his part in promoting how awesome Jackie Chan is and was at this point in time to the American audience. So he started to collect reviews of his Hong Kong-based, of Jackie Chan's, that is, Hong Kong action films. He started to collect reviews of these other movies, spent 2 weeks coding and developing a website to then host all of those reviews on, and then obviously started hosting reviews for Rush Hour as well. And as they say, the rest is history. Yeah, that's right. This movie is the reason why we all now have that friend who's like, well, you know, it only has a 72% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, so I don't know if I want to watch this movie. That guy. So maybe not everything that came from this movie was great, but it is amazing to think about if Rush Hour was never made, the fact that probably we would also not have the Owen Wilson Shanghai duology, but there's a reality where if this movie was never made, there is no Rotten Tomatoes website. And that is bonkers to think about here in the year of our Lord 2026, not having Rotten Tomatoes at our disposal. Like, I don't necessarily swear by Rotten Tomatoes, but I've talked about here on the show before, if I do a review of a movie that I know is typically seen as a bad movie or a it's so bad it's good movie, that is when I'll go to like Rotten Tomatoes to like see what people have to say, especially after I've watched it or rewatched it. So that way I can kind of, it's almost like me trying to see like, okay, am I in the majority or the minority when it comes to some of the things I was seeing about this movie? Now, as I alluded to at the beginning of this episode, Screen Rant doesn't necessarily agree that this movie is good. Last year, I did an episode talking about the worst martial art movies. And what I did, in case you haven't listened to that one, is that I went around the internet and I found lists. You know, a lot of times when we talk about the worst martial art movie, the conversation normally gravitates towards it's so bad, it's good, funny, you know, movies that are like cult classics now, like The Miami Connection, for example. But what I was trying to do was find what movies are genuinely considered to be bad. Like, these are just not good films. And ironically, Miami Connection was on there. Both Game of Death. I found, I think it was like three or four different lists. Both Game of Death films came up frequently. Mortal Kombat Annihilation, which we're still all waiting to hear what Joe Day has to say to defend Mortal Kombat Annihilation. But that had to be one of the most popular picks. But in the list I found from Screen Rant, they said that Rush Hour, compared to other Jackie Chan films, really isn't that good and therefore deserve to be on a list of the 10 worst martial art films. A list that also included when you compare it to other lists that included films like Dragon Ball Evolution or Three Ninjas Showdown at Mega Mountain or High Noon at Mega Mountain, like the fact that Rush Hour was included is just banana sandwich to me that they would include such a film. It is easily one of Jackie Chan's top films of the 90s, arguably one of his top films of his entire career. Same goes to Chris Tucker in that regard as well. It's already established, as I have here on the show, that it's kind of a historic film by way of like film reviewing history, which is a weird category to be a part of, but it's a fairly important film. But let's see, what did Screen Rant have to say about it? Screen Rant said, that by way of the Jackie Chan portions of the film, it's not that big of a deal. There's bigger stunts, there's better action in other movies. And that may be true. You know, Jackie Chan does have the big fall at the end of the movie. But otherwise, stunt-wise, it is a pretty basic Jackie Chan parkour focused film by way of the stunts. Most notably, the scene where he's trying to get over the security wall to where the Chinese ambassador is at, the Hong Kong ambassador is at, and he just does tic-tacs up the wall, lands on it, lands next to the security camera that's pointing right at him, and so he turns it and then goes over the side of the wall. Here's the thing. I was a child when I first watched this movie. I am no longer a child. I am 32 years old, and I know how to do what Jackie Chan did in that scene, and it still pops the boys, okay? Like, I am still so excited whenever I see Jackie Chan do something like this. They also say that the fight choreography in this film, there are better fight scenes. And yeah, Shanghai Noon may have the more iconic fight scene, seeing how he uses moose antlers and he's not using Drunken Fist Kung Fu like in the Drunken Master movies, but he's not necessarily phoning it in either. If this movie was supposed to be the American introduction of Jackie Chan to an American audience, then I think it makes sense. Either option would have made sense. Either you want to go big and have him do some kind of, you know, jumping across two buildings, like in some of his, like Rumble in the Bronx, he's got the big jumping across two buildings, or some crazy fight scenes, like something out of Drunken Master. Or you just, here he is, let us introduce you to him. He does parkour and he does kung fu. I think both options were viable. And the fact that they went for, okay, here is who Jackie Chan is. He can do these parkour things. He can do these kung fu things. I think that's perfectly fine for when the movie came out. And honestly, we know what movies Jackie Chan went on to make in the early 2000s, and though I will defend The Tuxedo, there are plenty of movies from that period that are genuinely worse movies. Like, there are worse movies that Jackie Chan made with less bigger stunts, with less fight scenes, not as well choreographed fight scenes. The fight scenes in this movie are well choreographed and very engaging. I will always, this movie is just for the boys, let me tell you, because it popped me again. I will always pop for a good bar fight scene that is involving pool tables, which you get in this movie. And I love that. I love those kinds of fight scenes when pool cues and pool balls are getting whipped around. You're going up and over and around pool tables. Like, I think it's just like a fun environmental hazard to try and navigate. I would never want to actually do that, but they're a lot of fun. And yes, it was scarring, but I do love the scene in Boondock Saints when Rocco beats that one guy with a pool ball. It's, again, Once billiards is involved in a fight scene, I'm here for the ride. There's also the scene where they're at the Chinese restaurant where the gangster is allegedly hanging out at, and Chris Tucker is posing as his lawyer to try and get through, and Jackie Chan's pretending to be a waiter so he can navigate it. And then they have the fight scene where they're like kind of holding hands with each other and switching sides and whipping each other back and forth and doing kicks and whatnot. And yeah, that's an iconic fight scene. I mean, that is one of the ones that they replicate throughout the rest of the series, along with a lot of Chris Tucker's lines. The most iconic one is obviously the one that I opened the show with. Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth? But Chris Tucker is just like, okay, I haven't really watched a lot of Chris Tucker, I'll be honest. Like, outside of Rush Hour movies, I don't know if I've really watched anything else. That one music video he did with Michael Jackson, I have seen that. But I haven't really watched too many other Chris Tucker films. But man, this guy is just on fire. If Jackie Chan is phoning it in on the stunts and the fight choreography, then Chris Tucker is putting in a 200% effort with these lines. He is hilarious. Never Touch a Black Man's Radio made me laugh so hard, probably because as a child it didn't really mean anything to me, but as an adult I had forgotten about that line and found it incredibly funny. One of the other bits that they create in this movie that they'll replicate in the sequels is the, okay, which one of you did that? When he gets kicked, but he's not quite sure which guard that's around him hit him in the moment. And then, of course, there's I, even as a kid, thought it was funny, the line, $50 million? Who do you think you have, Chelsea Clinton? Like, I even thought as a kid that was funny. And I think it just had to do with how fast Chris Tucker talks. Even if I didn't necessarily know who Chelsea Clinton is, I was a small child. I barely understood what a president was at that time, let alone that the president had daughters. But I think it's just like how fast and just the timing. Chris Tucker's timing is just so, so good. So funny in this movie. Even from the get-go, when you're first introduced to him and he's doing the sting, the undercover sting operation on this guy who's like running weapons, and he's shooting at the guy's trunk that has C4 in it and it blows up, and he just bust out into some Michael Jackson dance moves. Like, yeah, let's go, man. It's such a good, fun movie. Asterisk. Okay, so some things about this movie really don't hold up. Just a few, very few things. If it's been a moment since you've seen this movie, you may have forgotten about one of the things that happens in this movie that definitely not only makes it a bit icky, but is one of those things of like, yeah, maybe it was more permissible in the 90s to do a joke like that, but even then, that doesn't make it good. So one of the things that is very dated about this film is the fact that it's directed by Brett Ratner. He's a scumbag and a successful one until he was called out, and is now making his big rebound this year with the Melania documentary that everybody loved. Everybody loved that documentary, right? Like, groundbreaking material on that film. Screw you, Brett Ratner. So yeah, that part doesn't really age well. And obviously, if I'm going to go on to do the next two, I'm going to have to take shots at Ratner again. Chris Tucker actually worked a lot with Brett Ratner, which is because he did these three movies, and then he did one movie before Rush Hour called, I think it was Easy Money, maybe Fast Money. What was it? Money Talks. That was not, I knew the word money was somewhere in there. Money Talks with Charlie Sheen. That was Brett Ratner's first film. Chris Tucker had done some work prior to that, but that was the first time those two had gotten connected. Also, I guess I really shouldn't, if I'm going to take my shots at Brett Ratner, I better go ahead and also just put out there that, yeah, also Chris Tucker has come up in the Epstein files as well. There's pictures with him and I always say her name wrong. Maxwell, whatever. I don't know how to say her first name. And Brett Ratner has denied sitting on couches with Jeffrey Epstein, even though you can just see pictures of him sitting on a couch with Jeffrey Epstein. So, like, Ratner just continues to double down on the fact that he's not a good guy, but hopefully, I don't know too much beyond the photograph with Chris Tucker and Maxwell, but that would be a bummer. That would be a true bummer, but, you know, got to call him like I see him sometimes here on the show, folks. The other, like, part of this movie that doesn't age well and probably shouldn't have even been okay in the 90s, even though it was, is that, so that bar fight scene I talked about earlier, Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan are doing some undercover work, and Tucker takes him to the, Chris Tucker is kind of this like LAPD guy who, you know, works above the law, kind of does his own thing, and therefore he's got a lot of connections with people who are criminals, so that way he can like get information. So he takes Jackie Chan to this one gang hideout, and he starts Chris Tucker starts interrogating the leader of this gang, and then he dismisses Jackie Chan while he to continue the interrogation, only to then reveal the fact that Chris Tucker and this gang leader are like cousins and they're just gonna have a normal conversation. He just wanted to like look cool in front of Jackie Chan. So Jackie Chan then goes to the bar and he's just hanging out. Now, when they first came into the bar and Chris Tucker is saying hello to people, he says, "What's up, my N-word?" to these guys. Because Chris Tucker is black and the men are black. So Jackie Chan, relying upon the fact that this joke relies upon the fact that there is some ignorance at play here, Jackie Chan sits at the bar, looks at the bartender, who is a large black man, and says, "What's up, my N-word?" And obviously that goes over like a lead balloon with the bartender. And says something like, "What did you just call me?" And Jackie Chan, now confused, because again, this whole joke rides on ignorance, then says again, confused, "What's up, my N-word?" And then that big fight scene breaks out. So here's the thing. Ha ha, he he. Jackie Chan doesn't know that that's one of the most offensive racial slurs of all time. Apparently, news hadn't crossed over into Hong Kong that that is, you know, an incredibly offensive term that is used by the African-American community as a way to take back power. Okay, fine. I still don't know if it's necessarily appropriate to have written the joke. Okay? I don't know. I don't think so. I could be wrong. I will admit, I could be wrong about this. This does remind me then again, you know, Joshua Noel and I did a review of Shanghai Noon back when the show first got started. And we talked about how some of the humor in that movie is, from 2026 standpoint, a little discolored, but in a 2000 and I think it was 2000, 2001 when that movie came out, can't remember now, standpoint, it was kind of cutting edge and trying to poke fun at racial ignorance. Like the jokes that are racist are being done in a way to actually make fun of the person who is saying the joke rather than the joke itself. And I think it's just one of those, like, even if it's well-meaning, which if it's Brett Ratner, I don't know if it's well-meaning. I guess nothing has ever come up about him being a racist, though, so I shouldn't imply that. But if it was Tarantino, absolutely. But I think it's just one of those things that, like, maybe at the time, it does kind of work. This is some of the stuff that people say nowadays about The Office, especially like the very early seasons, of like some of the more race-driven jokes are funny not because of the jokes, but because of what it's saying about the person saying it. I think it's just that when culture continues to like grow and learn, even these jokes that may be well-meaning just kind of age and get dated a little bit because, yeah, I don't think Jackie Chan should be saying the N-word. It is kind of weird now. And I have seen clips in reels before and hey, do you remember that time Jackie Chan said the N-word? And it's kind of this like, oh, if you don't know the context, which would be surprising, I would assume most people have seen Rush Hour, at least people who are really into martial art media probably have. But I could definitely see how if you just kind of know Jackie Chan as like that funny old dude martial artist and you haven't seen Rush Hour, that could definitely be like a bit jarring of like no context, no nuance, just him saying the N-word. Like that would be odd. Anyway, so would I watch Rush Hour again? All that is to say, though, would I watch Rush Hour again? Yeah, of course. I've said it once, I think, here on the show, and I'll say it again. Rush Hour, the Rush Hour franchise is very similar to Toy Story. The first two are perfect. The third one is fine. I could take it or leave it. Anything beyond that is completely unnecessary. And I will double down on that for Toy Story. Stop making more Toy Story movies. Would I own a physical media copy of it? I already do. That's what I watched. And unfortunately, if you would like to watch this, as of the recording of this episode, that's going to be your best bet as well, because it's only available buy or rent right now on places like YouTube and Amazon. So, hey, just get back into physical media. Go buy a DVD. I just posted the other day. I even bought some VHS tapes recently. So next time I'm out and if I find a Rush Hour one, man, I'm totally adding that to the collection. I don't care. I now have two different copies of Bloodsport. I have two different copies of the movie The Phantom, like, because it's two different forms of media. So why not? It's fun. Get back into physical media. Thank you for listening to today's episode. We are running out of time. If you haven't yet already, please rate and review this show wherever you get your podcasts. Pass this episode along to a friend. And check out the other great shows here on the Anazao Ministries Podcast Network, like Page and Pixel. Yeah. That's not their theme song, but it should be. Page and Pixel, Systematic Geekology, and my sister show, My Seminary Life, where earlier this month I celebrated the 5-year anniversary of that show. I can't believe I've been doing this for 5 years and I'm still putting out crap content, but you keep listening to this crap, so or at least that crap. This thing's only been around for a year and a half, so whether it's been 5 years or a year and a half, thank you for listening to whatever this is. And check out my YouTube channel, Studio 219, a place for faith and pop culture. That's it for me. This has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I've delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and served up some wisdom one slice at a time.